This is an ABC podcast.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
In an instant, your entire body heats up and your adrenaline goes through the roof. Your muscles deaden and your skin begins to vibrate as if being shocked by a mild electric current. Thoughts swirl around in your mind almost in a haze, but anything anyone says to you just doesn't make any sense. You're having a panic attack. And Warwick Long, they're more common than maybe we realise.
Yeah, Rochelle, up to 35% of the population experience a panic attack at some time in their lives. That statistic floored me, really. And of late, many people have been speaking publicly about having a panic attack, including our own ABC News Breakfast weather reporter, Nate Byrne, who's going to join you this hour. His experience actually is almost my first window into panic attacks, and reading about it and being just a watcher of the show was certainly a window for me, and I think many others. So today we'll take his experience and talk more about this, well, experience that 35%, that's one third of the population. It's absolutely extraordinary. You're going to hear from another guest as well today who had a panic attack live on ABC TV News Breakfast.
It's a bit
of
a running theme, by the way, of panic attacks occurring on this particular program, so we might sort of dive into that. You know what else floored me, and we're going to hear from one of our guests today, is that up until the 80s and even the 90s, so, you know, the 90s to me feels like yesterday, panic attacks weren't taken seriously. Yeah. They were, even some within the medical profession didn't believe they were a real thing. And what's fascinating is that researching today and looking at how people were diagnosed, when they were occur, and then some of the results that can happen to some people. So if you're having them on a really frequent basis, say two or three times a week, it can lead to agoraphobia, so fear of leaving the house. I had a light bulb moment that I think that my grandmother, my sweet Nana, who is no longer with us, I think for all of these years we were diagnosing her with angina attacks every time she went out to a family event that was at a public place, at the pub or something. She would have an attack and we would take her to hospital. She was told she was having some form of a heart attack.
Oh, wow.
She ended up living with agoraphobia. I actually think that she was having panic attacks because she died. Her heart was fine. She actually never had anything wrong with her heart. So I'm thinking maybe she was misdiagnosed her entire life.
That's extraordinary. We should examine that a little bit more over this next hour. Let's also talk about other people's experience as well. How do you break the stigma on something that wasn't even believed to be something within our lifetime, within a generation as well? So do you live with panic attacks? Have you experienced one in the past? If you're comfortable to share your story today.
Panic attacks for so long, they just weren't believed. But more and more people are talking publicly about them. I know Luke McGregor, which many people would know from ABC TV, and also a stand-up comedian, has just recently spoken publicly about having one on stage and even saying to his audience whilst in the middle of a comedy routine, "I think I'm having a panic attack." Nate Byrne, many, if not most, 99% of our audience would know from ABC TV News Breakfast, of course, is our weather reporter. Nate, a warm welcome to the Conversation Hour. Today's program, I guess, was sparked by just how publicly you addressed your panic attack, and actually you've had multiple panic attacks live on TV.
I have, yeah. Morning. It is still morning, right? Yes.
Yes. You've morning, been up for Rochelle. A long time.
Yeah. G'day, Woz. I had no idea when I wrote the piece how widely it was going to be read and how many people would get in touch with me. I honestly wrote about it. It was years after it first happened. You know, it's not like I had my first and went, "Oh, guess what? You know, this is what's happened to me." Because it took me a little while to, you know, sort of come to terms with it and realize what was going on for me myself. But when I wrote it, I didn't think it would be that sort of groundbreaking or eye opening for people. But it turned out that very much was not the case. It's had a very, very strong response from a lot of people, some of who realize that they've now realize that they've had panic attacks and didn't know what they were and didn't know what to call them.
Nate, thank you so much for joining us and talking about your experiences today. Can you take us back to the first time it happened on TV? Did you know what was happening?
No idea. None at all. And it was pretty terrifying in the moment. The very first time, it was a brand new feeling for me, and physical reaction is all it was. It's not like I thought myself into a panic attack. Mm. I wasn't worried. You know, standing at the weather wall, which is what I do every morning, it was literally a dream when I got the job. And to this day, 5 years on, it remains the dream. It's my safe place. It's my happy place. It's where I know what I'm talking about and what I'm doing. So what had happened that morning is I had left it a little late leaving my desk, which as people who deal with live broadcasts, we know what that's like, right?
Sometimes. We know how far we can run, whether you can make it to the toilet, make a cup of tea in 3 minutes.
Exactly. And I had some weather warnings on and I was, you know, deep in the bureau trying to get the latest information, because there's nothing worse than saying, oh, we've just had 55 millimetres in Townsville, and then getting back to my desk and realising, oh, it's actually 75 millimetres, and they'd updated it 1 minute before you went in. So I was keeping my head in the game. I got the call, Nate, you need to get there now. And I ran to the wall, got there just as they were throwing to me, and had to control my breathing, because I, you know, there's nothing less attractive than, hello, welcome to the breakfast. So just nice, calm, controlled breathing as I was talking. And it started happening in that 90 seconds, all of a sudden, the whole world changed for me.
Now, we've cleared with this with you, just in case listeners are thinking, why on earth would you make Nate relive this? And this is actually on the ABC's website as well. So this is one of, because it's happened a few times, but this is, I guess, just describing what you described then. So this is what happened live on TV.
In Victoria, there are a couple of light showers, maybe just around the coast, but otherwise it's fine. For Melbourne, a top of 17 today. And in Tasmania, a bit of wet weather continues for the west and the far south. Gusty winds too, but all of the warnings have been cancelled. 16 degrees on the way for Hobart. Over in South Australia, skies are mostly clear. We might get an afternoon storm around the agricultural area. For Adelaide, it's a fine day, staying pretty warm as well, getting to 20. While in the west, it's looking pretty fine for the most part. Maybe a shower or storm around the western parts of the Goldfields and the Eucla. Perth, sunny in 26, while up top, it's looking pretty fine for the most part. 35 degrees on the way for Darwin.
I've just instantly broken into a sweat, Nate, myself. The first thing I thought of when I watched that was, what a bloody professional. You still managed to get the weather out, right?
This yeah.
But what was happening at that moment? I mean, that must be difficult for you to listen to, or is it not now?
It raises the hair on the back of my neck sort of thing, and makes me think about those feelings. The thing is, in that example there, so that's not the very first one. The very first one, it's less remarkable than that, watching it and listening to it. That's a subsequent one, because what it turns out we think happened is at that first time when I was controlling my breath, I wasn't getting enough oxygen to my brain, right? So my brain's like, oh gosh, okay, we need to do a couple of things here. We need to get in breathing. And the way to do that is to get the heart racing, heart lung pump, you know, and start to make you want to pant, which I was fighting. So now what had happened is, when I was back at the wall later on, my brain saw that it was in the same position, and oh gosh, when we were here before, we've been out of air. So we need to do a few things. We need to get all of those reactions going. And that's why I sound so breathless, even though I hadn't run at any point to the wall. That's very much banned on News Breakfast now. You'll be pleased to know. But that's my body saying, hey, there's something probably going to be wrong here. We need to get ourselves ready. So let's breathe. And I'm fighting it so hard, which is why my voice sounds so wobbly. But that's not the only thing that's happening.
The connection to breathing is so interesting. Mm. And we'll talk to you more about that. Nate Byrne is the weather presenter on ABC News Breakfast. He's with you. We're talking panic attacks on the Conversation Hour today. Jenny has called that number from Geelong. Jenny, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. About 40 years ago, I woke up, in the middle of the night, in the middle of winter. We had acres with horses and stuff. I had to get outside. I just had to pace. I was wringing my hands. I was crying. I just was at, it was freezing, middle of winter. I just could not come inside. My husband thought, I didn't really know what was going on. I'm sure my husband thought I was a bit weird. And that was the start of panic attacks. And when I did get inside, I took the day off work, went to the doctor who was totally disinterested. I have panic attacks a lot, but I've had a lot of, physical unwellness too. So I do, I have seen a psychologist and a psychiatrist for years. I am on medication. My panic attacks are less. I know when they're going to come on. I know once I had to go into hospital for something, for a procedure, and I think it was the start.
Isn't that fascinating, Jenny? We're actually going to hear from a psychiatrist in the moment who also lives with panic or panic disorder, and it's about finding your own techniques and what helps you. And I know, Nate, you've spoken about that as well. And you've spoken with, you know, even with your psychiatrist about, okay, well, I work in live television, you know, so I'm going to be in this situation again. Yeah. How do I manage it?
It's horrible, Jenny, knowing that, you haven't been diagnosed quickly by a doctor, because I was so lucky that first day that it happened, because I was also on air that night and I managed to do it because my doctor was so switched on and helped treating me to help me be treated straight away. But you're right, I have a little sneaky trick when I feel it coming on, and it doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's the old thumbnail into the side of my finger, because it's something I can do on air. When I went to this it was a psychologist that I saw first, the advice was, remove yourself from the situation, you know, and I was like, yeah, that's great. But
I can't.
I'm on live television. I can't just step away. We came up with some ideas, and that for me is one that I've figured out. You'll never see me doing it because it's too subtle to spot, but it just gives my brain something else to focus on.
And Nate, that idea of feeling it coming on, can you describe that, at least from your own personal experience, hearing Jenny talk about that and you talk about that? How much warning do you have?
For me, not much, because the trigger, quote unquote, I know that is a loaded term for some people, but the trigger for me is seeing the words, "Here's Nate with the weather," on the auto cue. So, and it's only when I'm standing at the wall. If I'm sitting at the couch and see those words, no problem. If I'm at the desk, literally anywhere else, it's only in that one spot at the wall. And all it is my body starting to react. So I get a little feeling of like dread in the pit of my stomach. My skin starts to tingle. I get a little bit sweaty, just like at the hairline sort of thing. And just, do you know when you're in a dangerous place or, you know, late at night down a dark alley and you just, your whole body sort of switches on to,
I shouldn't be here.
Yeah, I'm keeping an eye out. I'm listening. But do I need to run? It's that. That's the feeling that comes first. And then the actual panic attack is that cranked up to 100.
And what we'll go into a little later as well is that, Nate, you've been in dangerous situations.
Yeah.
You know, you're a veteran. You're a returned soldier. So you've been in positions where panic would actually be completely understandable.
Yeah.
And you've been in some of the most unthinkable positions, and yet this happens during television. There's texts here saying, good morning, I used to get bad panic attacks at the supermarket. I'd have to drop my basket full of food and just leave, otherwise I would faint. I found stopping alcohol and changing my diet to gluten-free actually helped me a lot. It can happen anywhere for no reason at all. And that's from Martin. And I guess that can lead to longer-term things, which we'll chat about with Steve Allen in just a moment, in that you might be able to control it like you can, Nate, but for some people it can change your entire life, and there's a fear of leaving the house.
Yeah, well, you know, panic attacks are a separate thing from a generalized anxiety problem or disorder, but they can come hand in hand. You know, panic attacks that happen all the time can lead you to be so stressed and so concerned all the time that you might have one, that has its own physical impacts as well. It's it can be incredibly debilitating if it's not something that you're able to get on top of.
Melissa has called from Hawthorne. Melissa, thank you for joining this program. What did you want to say?
I just wanted to share my experience with long-term panic attacks, which I think I had my first one. I'm, you know, mid-40s now. I had my first one when I was about 21, and ended up in hospital that night because I didn't have any idea what was going on. And suffer from an anxiety disorder, which is often where panic attacks come from. I let it, it was sort of on and off, I guess, for the last 20 years, but let it manifest. Didn't go and see the right people, and it just started affecting every aspect of my life. So if you let it go and you let it manifest, yeah. it will start the driving. I had one when I was driving, so then I was scared of driving. I could barely drive around the block. This was only sort of last year still. So going to friends, I'd have to make up excuses while I was catching trains and trams. And then even flying, which I've never had a problem with, started manifesting into that. Even walking to an area I didn't know, or walking over a bridge was a scary experience. And I actually, I guess the clincher for me was I actually suffered a cardiac arrest 2 years ago, which wasn't the result of having panic attacks, but it can actually mimic. A lot of people, when they're having a panic attack,
think they're having a heart attack. 100%. That's so common, isn't it? And that's the first thing you're treated for and diagnosed as. They think, well, there's something wrong with your heart. Mm. That's the first thing. Melissa, where are you at the moment? Is this something that still affects you to the level that you've just described?
No. So I guess having the cardiac arrest, I survived, obviously, and I then saw a cardiac psychologist. And she has now been treating me not so much for the cardiac sort of trauma, but now my ongoing anxiety and panic attacks. So she's been fantastic, and I'm back driving. I'm going to friends' places. I'm walking. I'm doing we do everything in stages. So I haven't, you know, got in an elevator yet or done some things. No sort of driving on the freeway and stuff like that yet, but I'm driving around the suburbs. I've got my freedom back.
Oh, good on you.
I probably have a panic attack maybe once a year. My last one was quite scary. It was brought on by sort of doing a very heavy cardio session, which can, doing really intense exercise can bring on the same.
You're nodding there, Nate. Is that everything? Something that you get as well?
Yeah, well, no, not with the with working out, mostly because I'm pretty lazy. But but no, Melissa, you're dead on. You know, that it can be a physical as well as a psychological thing that gets you there. I mean, for me, 100% physical for the first one. But then later, often the brain was getting in. And that's really what this is about, right? This is just a bit of bad wiring or not helpful wiring in the brain. And the thing is, the way the brain works, if it fires together, it wires together, and the more it happens, the stronger that connection becomes, and the more likely it is that those neurons are going to fire together again and you might have another panic attack.
And Melissa, how important has it been for you to get, there's a bit of a running theme here of getting the right help, you know, and finding that right doctor or you know, mental health practitioner that really gets you and understands that what you're going through is real. Has that been important for you?
Oh, definitely. So it's not the first time that I've tried to seek help. So I have gone to a few psychologists over the years, and they just haven't been right for me. And I guess, you know, through my heart episode, I happened to find this psychologist, and she has changed my life, really, because it will affect every aspect. So social, driving, you become reclusive. You don't want to go out in case. I couldn't even get on a tram at one stage because you're scared of the panic. You're scared of having a panic attack in front of people. So a packed train, forget it. I was getting off trains, getting on with them, getting off. It was exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting having a panic disorder. But look, my psychologist has said that this will always probably be with me. It is genetic to some extent, my anxiety. So it's something that I'll never get rid of, but I can manage. And I just want to say to anyone who suffers from them, like, they are terrifying, and they're always, everyone is a little bit different, so that when they're reaching that crescendo of your panic attack, you can think, oh, I don't think this is a panic attack. I think this is a heart, or this is a stroke. So they are absolutely terrifying, but there is help and there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and you can manage it. Then just try and find, you know, go to your GP, and if you have to go to a few psychologists, until you find the right one, it's worth it. Look, I'm also on medication as well. So it's a combination, you know, of medication, therapy. I exercise a lot. I've changed my diet. I mean, I've changed my life since the cardiac.
Incredible.
The cardiac stress.
Incredible.
Yeah. So, yeah, there is light, but they are, they can ruin your life. They can ruin your life.
And it's really, I think that advice is just, it's been vital for a lot of people. Melissa, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Nate, that idea of getting some control so that can allow more freedom that Melissa was talking about, obviously, I'm not going to say extreme case, but certainly she has been through a lot over the last few years, but getting that control to get freedom, is that something you can relate to?
Absolutely. I mean, the reason I was able to fill in on the evening news that night is 100% because of some beta blockers that the doctor prescribed me. There are... luckily, a very simple drug to take. I didn't have any sort of side effects from them at all. All they do is help to just dull that response, mostly the heart rate, which actually drives a lot of the rest of the physiological response, right? Because, like I said before, the heart-lung pump, it's this biologically linked system. So if you breathe heavily, your heart starts beating quickly, more quickly, so that it can use all the oxygen that you're trying to draw in. And the other way around as well, if your heart starts to race, then your lungs draw in more oxygen so that the blood that's leaving the heart has some oxygen in it. For me, though, taking those beta blockers doesn't stop everything from happening. It just keeps it at that sort of more feeling of the feelings rising sort of situation. It keeps it at that sort of level rather than letting it go full panic attack. And that just means that you're able to function and slowly teaches the brain like, oh, hey, this space, this place we are in is actually safe.
Before we have a chat to Professor Steve Allen from Melbourne University, he's also a psychiatrist at Peter MacCallum Cancer Centre, let's have a chat with Libby, who's called through. Hi, Libby.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. What do you want to say?
I had my first panic attack when I was going through menopause, and I'm a person that's always been really in control, owning businesses, and the first panic attack I had, I went to hospital. I thought I was having a heart attack. They said, no, you're having a panic attack. So it was mainly when I was going through menopause that triggered it, and I learnt to control it with breathing. I would, if it happened in the middle of the night, I would go outside in the cold air, find a noise or a sound to concentrate on and slow my breathing down. And it slowly subsided as menopause sort of started to settle down.
Libby, that's something that's happening to you later in life then too. What does it do to your confidence or your feeling of self when this happened?
Oh, no, it really knocked me around. I even started to get very nervous driving. It was weird, like for a person who'd been totally in control of everything, this thing really knocked me around. And I can, it's not as bad now, but in certain circumstances I can feel it coming and I just remove myself, do my breathing, tell myself everything's fine, this is what's going on, you're all right, everything's okay. But, yeah, it really knocked confidence, really knocked.
There's quite a few people, Libby, that have said that they had a similar experience to you, that the first time they had them was during menopause. So we might actually put that to some of our experts today as well. So many texts, so apologies if we can't get through them all today. This one that says, I'm a jazz singer. I performed to 2 sold-out shows at Hamer Hall, and throughout each one I felt like I was going to die from my panic attacks. Not one person, including my family, noticed, but I was imprisoned by my breathlessness whilst singing and smiling away. It's horrific and it's debilitating. Talking about this, though, is important. I've been in and out of these attacks for more than 20 years. It ebbs and flows, and medication, taking time out, and good food does help as well. Big hugs to all out there. And that's from Anonymous. Diet is interesting, so we'll put that to some of our guests as well. But if you have lived with panic attacks, is it something now that it's a bit of a light bulb moment? Maybe you think that it was your parent or your grandparent as well.
Looking at panic attacks today, the people who have experienced them, but also what can be done about them as well. We'll be talking about that through shortly. Warwick Long today in Shepparton, Rochelle Hunt in Melbourne with our guest today.
Yeah, well, our guest who just saw himself on the television. This is quite trippy because at the moment, Nate is sitting in front of me and he's also currently on the television presenting the weather. So yeah. This is...
Look, it's a skill only weather presenters have. I wish I could tell you how to do it, but it's innate. You either have it or you don't.
Text on this. I had a panic attack after 2 days curled up on the floor. I was found by a neighbour, thankfully. My doctor diagnosed me with PTSD, which is actually caused by the death of my wife. And lots of love coming in for you, Nate, saying, Nate, you're a legend. I can't believe you kept it together. Well done. Thank you for doing this. And a lot of love also, too, for Melissa, who just rang in, saying, Melissa, it was so brave of you to tell your story about panic attacks and for what you've been through. I've been living this with all my life as well and fighting without medication or professional help. Let's bring in Steve Allen here. He's a professor at Melbourne University and a psychiatrist at the Peter MacCallum Cancer Centre. Also did his doctorate in panic and panic disorder. Steve, you're also a semi-regular guest on News Breakfast. When, I guess, did your, I was going to say fascination, but your interest in panic come about? Was it something that you always knew within your medical life that you wanted to specialise in?
No, and I didn't, I mean, I wouldn't probably consider myself a subspecialist in it, although I did my training in panic back in psychiatry at a hospital, the Austin Hospital in Heidelberg, which was the centre for panic disorder research back in the 80s and 90s in Australia. So it was sort of, you know, so I saw people with panic disorder every day. That's why I did my doctorate in panic and post-traumatic stress disorder. And so it became a part of my career. And also I'm quite an anxious person and I've had panic attacks myself. So, you know, I have the double fascination as I happen to be in the right place at the right time career-wise and I've experienced panic. So, you know, it's always been fascinating for me.
Speaking of being in the right place and the right time, the history of knowledge of panic attacks and the idea of it as a disorder, Steve, can you tell us a little bit about that? Because it's not a long history, is it?
No, it was hilarious. So I started training in psychiatry in late 80s, early 90s. And back then, if you said, and as I say, I was at the Austin, which was the Panic Disorder Centre for Australia. And if you went outside the Austin and talked about panic disorder, people, you know, the medical profession largely laughed and said, it's a load of crap. You know, I don't know, these physical symptoms and these psychological symptoms. Look, you know, some people have them. It's not a psych disorder. It's just the psychiatrist trying to create a bit of turf to have patients to treat. And I remember I went to one of the first lectures I went to on they call them grand rounds, these big lectures where all sorts of people present so that, you know, we all learn from each other. And there was this specialist cardiologist talking and he described exactly panic attacks and all the patients he saw in his clinic who had classic panic attack, but he called it something else. He called it, I think, anxious heart. And he said, look, the main thing to do with these people is to tell them that there's nothing wrong, that it'll always be with them. Come back every 6 months and I'll check you and reassure you. And whatever you do, don't send them to a psychiatrist because they won't get any better. And I remember contacting him afterwards and said, look, that's classic panic disorder you're talking about. We can treat that, you know. We've got treatments these days and the people will get better and you just wouldn't have a bar of it because doctors didn't believe in it back then.
It's funny, after speaking to you off air yesterday, Steve, and I know was when you and I were chatting this morning, I quite honestly, hand on heart, I had a light bulb moment that my nan, my beautiful nan Moya, for her entire life, whenever there was a special event for the family, like so if we were all getting together for someone's birthday or for her birthday and we were going to the pub or to the RSL for lunch, she'd get so worked up about it and so excited that she wouldn't eat beforehand, but she would always have what was labelled an angina attack. She would have what we would think it was some kind of heart attack. She'd be taken to the hospital. And for her entire life, we kind of thought that Nan had heart issues. And it got to the point where, and I didn't put two and two together, she actually was living with agoraphobia. So she never left the house. She'd barely go to the letterbox. And she would always be dressed up and look immaculate. But people had to come to her to see her. The correlation there was never made. And I actually wonder, because even when she died of old age, there was nothing wrong with her heart. I actually wonder now whether Nan just was having panic attacks this whole time.
Almost certainly. You know, that description, you know, what you describe is incredibly common, especially back then, because if you think back, we didn't have the language to describe emotional states up until really 20 or 30 years ago. It started becoming popular. And even when I was a young doctor, when you saw people over about 60, you'd say to them, you know, how are you feeling emotionally, psychologically? You've got any anxiety? And they'd look at you perplexed because people didn't talk about their feelings. And that combination of common angina attacks, which were panic attacks, and the clinches, the agoraphobia, the fact that she didn't go out of the house much. Agoraphobia can be caused by other things, but panic disorder is by far the commonest cause.
And I have a text here from Jan in Ballarat saying, what can you do to help someone if you see they are having an attack? Steve, what's your advice to those of us who might be in the presence of somebody having a panic attack wondering what to do?
Well, the first thing to keep in mind, if it's the first panic attack, then you assume it's something physical and dangerous until proven otherwise when you get to the hospital, because no one can tell, not a doctor, not a person, the difference between panic and a heart attack the first time it occurs. Once you've had it a few times and you know what it is, you know, and you can say to someone, don't worry, I'm just having a panic attack. But the first time you get chest pain, you're in a rush to get to the hospital. And that should always be the case, because obviously time is of the essence and heart attacks can be beautifully treated if you get to the hospital early. So if it's the very first one, don't make assumptions. Just get to the hospital. Let the doctors and nurses do their magic. But if the person says, I'm having a panic attack because they've experienced it before and they know, then it really is just a matter of keeping out the way and reassurance. What I would normally do if I see someone is firstly I'd reassure them. I'd say, is this a panic attack? You've had them before? And they'll nearly always say yes. And I'll say, okay, let's just sit somewhere quietly, pop them down, and then I'll just sit with them, maybe hold their hand. And then once I think that they, you know, look like they're okay and they can listen to me, I'll speak nice and slowly and gently. And I'll say, try and concentrate on your breathing. Let's try and slow it down. Try and relax your body. But I'll also ask them, you know, whether they want me to help, because some people are really good at doing it themselves. They're well-trained. And in that case, you just get out of their way.
And Nate Byrne, that's something that I know, your beautiful colleague Lisa Miller has spoken very publicly as well about how to help you. Initially, she thought you were having a stroke on television. Have you had that chat with your colleagues of, okay, if you see it again or if you recognise it, do help, don't help, you know, do they know, is Michael ready as always to jump in and take over the weather?
Yeah, they are. And that actually, Lisa's experience was a big eye-opener to me as somebody who has had and still continues to have panic attacks every now and then. I would say on average, maybe once every 18 months to 2 years, I'll at least get the feelings. But learning that you need to tell people how to support you if you need them to support you, that's really important. And just mentioning to your colleagues, hey, this is something that happens, and to your family, and this is how I need to deal with it, if you know how to deal with it, if it's something that you're dealing with, it's so important, because then you can be supported in so many ways.
Nate Byrne's with you. We've also got Steve Ellen, who's a professor at Melbourne University and a psychiatrist at the Peter MacCallum Cancer Centre, with you as well. Paul from Albury can also join you now on the phone. Hi, Paul.
How you going, guys? Yeah, I was overseas and just with my wife and had a sudden sort of, I'd never had one before and had an attack, and I thought I was having a heart attack, you know. I just was debilitated. I couldn't move. I was sweaty. And it took me a good couple of days to sort of realise what it was.
Have you had one since?
Small ones that I know how to manage, but nothing like that. Like, it honestly felt like you're having a heart attack.
And was there anything that you feel like triggered it at all?
Not really, no. Yeah. I mean, I've been overseas numerous times before. No, it was just, I just had to sit down. I was everything was just spinning, you know, and I was sweaty and my heart was pounding. And, yeah, I had to go and lay down for a good, well, I just really lay low for a good couple of days afterwards.
And you say it took you a few days to work out what it might have been. They must have been a pretty worrying few days, Paul.
It was, yeah. I had no idea, and then sort of, I don't know, it just sort of dawned on me that that's probably what it was. And I do know how to manage it a lot better now than what I did before I realised what it was. So,
gosh, yeah. Good on you, Paul. Thanks for sharing your story. Steve, what's fascinating too is, and I know, Nate, we touched on this before and we can maybe go into it now, but we've had callers saying, you know, I find myself in stressful situations. I run a really big, successful company. Like, I know how to operate. It's not like I'm generally a scared or panicky person. So, Nate, I mean, we were talking about this because leading up to Anzac Day, I mean, you're a veteran. So you've been in actual scary situations.
I was in Bahrain for the during the uprising in the Middle East, you know, for the Arab Spring. I've driven warships through the Coral Sea, well, through the Great Barrier Reef when, you know, we're moments away from running aground at any time. I've had to work on the bridge of a ship with a firearm strapped to my leg because we're in pirate territory, you know, and that's never, ever been a problem for me. I'm always pretty cool, calm and collected. But the thing is that this isn't rational, right? This is your brain doing something that it shouldn't be doing. And Steve, we need panic, right? It's adaptive.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's absolutely zero relationship between the amount of things you've experienced in the past, how tough you are, how strong you are, how well you handle stress, because panic mostly comes out of the blue. And you can trigger it a little bit with the seeds of your mental health. So if you're going through a period where, you know, everything's wrong, you're not getting any exercise, your nutrition's off, you're sleeping badly, you've got multiple stresses in your life and you're getting no time to relax, well, you're sowing the ground and you're increasing the probability, but it's still it's a little bit of a biological anomaly. And you can see people that it can come on at any time in their life, sometimes the most calm times of their life, but so there's often no rhyme or reason. And you know, some I would have seen, I don't know, many hundreds of patients over the years, you know, some of them are the toughest people you've ever seen, you know, and especially the war veterans. I saw many war veterans who, you know, had experienced all sorts of stuff. And then they've come back and they go through a relationship breakup and now they get their panic attack and they come into me just perplexed, you know, why now? And sometimes we get some clues, but often we're all just perplexed and saying, well, that's the nature of the brain. It's curious and unpredictable.
Steve, just can you take us inside the mind or the body with what we know about what's physically happening to bring on a panic attack then?
Well, it's a little bit of a, you know, it's a little bit of a vicious cycle, as Nate and a couple of the other callers have highlighted, and it also is a hint to why beta blockers work. So what often happens is you're a little bit anxious and you're in a hurry or something's going on, and then you get a little bit short of breath, and then that feeds back into your psychological state and makes you slightly anxious because you know you're speaking or you're doing something, and then that makes your shortness of breath a little bit worse. Then you start to notice your heart, that's palpitations, and then your heart feels like it's pounding, and then you feel like you can't breathe, and the whole thing sort of spirals. And that's why, so beta blockers work by blocking the physical symptoms. They stop the tremor and they stop the heart racing, and that then stops those symptoms feeding back into your brain. And that's also how slow breathing works. Slow breathing just gets you to slow yourself down, which also calms your heart rate, etc. In terms of the actual biology, it's hard to understand, to be honest, but it's mainly to do with release of adrenaline and all those sorts of things.
Well, if it's hard for you to understand it, I
what hope do the rest of us have?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you'd be bored senseless if you go through all the receptors and stuff. And at the end of the day, they're just people trying to create biological explanations for things that we experience, and we don't really understand these things. The bottom line is we don't know why we have anxiety. As Nate says, we know it's important. No anxiety, no, you know, preparation for danger. And of course, you have to have that as part of your personality. But we don't understand the actual nuts and bolts very well.
Well, thank you. Steve Ellen's with you. We're talking panic attacks here on the Conversation Hour. Let's hear from more of you. Nicole has called from Mornington. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, how are you going?
What did you want to say?
I started having panic attacks in my early 20s and was having counselling with a psychiatrist, and I was eventually having probably, you know, a dozen panic attacks a day, and struggling to work in a high pressure environment, and it was quite chaotic. But I was just getting more and more prescriptions given to me, and eventually couldn't work anymore. Really, you know, had agoraphobia, didn't want to leave the house. The, you know, waiting in line at the supermarket was, you know, a surefire thing for a panic attack. And eventually ended up on, you know, disability and didn't work for a couple of years, and had, you know, I guess the opportunity to have a reset button, and had a lot of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and really addressed the thought patterns, and, you know, which were pretty distorted at that point. And so that was, you know, went on for like a decade. I was able to come off all of those medications and swap to a less addictive one. And then for like the last 10 years, I've been off medication. I've not had panic attacks. I do find the supermarket checkout aisle very stressful.
They are stressful.
You're not on your own.
That's really cool. Nicole, I mean, this has been a part of your entire life, really.
Really has. I mean, it feels like it. Or at least, you know, I mean, for a good decade, it was quite debilitating and derailing. But
And how much has your life changed now that, you know, you're off medication and, you know, yes, you can go into the supermarket, they're not a fun experience, but you can do it. How different is your life?
Oh, well, compared to then, very, very different. I don't think, you know, it's self-limiting if, you know, you don't want to go anywhere or just everywhere that you go in terms of being able to hold down employment. And I found, you know, the anxiety and the headspace to be able to retain information, like in a corporate environment, to be given information, I need to kind of rush back to my desk to write it down because I was not going to remember any of it. Just with how foggy your head gets in the middle of panic. And you know, now I can, you know, have a stressful job and just be stressful and still be able to function and that sort of stuff. And I think, you know, having grounding techniques and breathing and you know, it's made a huge difference, obviously. Yeah.
Nicole, thank you so much for calling and sharing. Incredible to hear your story. Thank you. Kathy has called from Northcote as well. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning, everybody. I just wanted to contribute a little bit too because even though I was a tomboy who loved climbing trees and heights and everything like that, forget it these days. And I think it all goes down to the fact that on my 17th birthday, right there at noon, the Westgate Bridge fell down. I've never been over it ever again. I tremble, I shake, and I'm the same with the underground Domain Tunnel and the Mullin Tunnel. I'm so afraid of driving in there to the point where the car is, I feel like the car is absolutely shaking like an earthquake. And it's really impacted on my ability to drive to my friends in regional areas because I have to sit between mega trucks, you know, and it's really, it impacts on your lifestyle.
Yeah. It is really good, though, that there are well-known medications that are really reliable that can help. And I was just thinking before when we were hearing there about a decade of dealing with them. Steve, I wonder, I was very lucky. I was on medication the same day I had my first panic attack and I was off it within 2 months. In fact, I could probably have dropped it within a few weeks, I reckon, but it became a bit more like Dumbo's feather, you know, just, and I was only taking a single tablet once a morning, 15 minutes before I went on air, and that was fine. How important in the mix do you think is medication, getting that diagnosis quickly?
You know, it is important. And it's, you don't necessarily, let me start from the start because I'll tie myself up in knots. Firstly, so medications are one of the many treatments for panic. And not everyone needs them. Some people do. And it's often just a personal choice. Some people like the psychological approach. Some people like the medications approach. Very much a case by case. And there's lots of different medications. You, Nate, I know are on beta blockers because I read it in an article you wrote. And so beta blockers are those drugs you take just before you're going to do something where you know panic is a possibility and they'll slow everything down. They're not addictive. They're relatively safe. You just got to make sure you don't have asthma and a couple of other things. And they're pretty easy to take. I've used them also as well. Sometimes if I know I'm doing something that'll be really anxiety provoking, I'll take a beta blocker beforehand. Then there's other medications that a few of the callers have mentioned. Antidepressants are by far the most popular. Antidepressants originally came out for anxiety disorders. It's just that there was a bigger market for depression, so they renamed them. But they're equally as good for anxiety and for depression. They're also not addictive, but you need to be on them a few weeks before they work, and something you need to adjust the dose. And in anxiety, you sometimes need a higher dose. And then, of course, there's things like Valium, the benzos, which doctors we don't tend to like because they are addictive. But so there's lots of medications. And the other thing I just want to mention a few people have mentioned psychologists and psychiatrists and GPs and how they didn't get the right advice. That is not uncommon. Mm. Not every doctor is good at everything, and a lot of them don't recognise their weaknesses, and so they'll often treat you even though they don't know all the ins and outs. To be honest, panic's pretty, you know, everyone knows it these days a bit because there's been education campaigns for the last couple of decades, especially in the 90s and the noughts when the government started realising how common this was and how little a lot of doctors knew. So it has improved a lot, but it is still problematic. So if you go to a doctor or a GP or a psychologist, anyone first up, and they don't seem to know exactly what they're doing, knock on a different door. You often have to try a few people until you find someone who you click with, who you like and you trust, and who also knows about the disorder.
And there's a lot of texts too that, again, like myself, are having that light bulb moment. There's one here saying, Nate, by the way, you're a really cool dude.
Aww, thanks.
We all knew that. For shining light on panic attacks, we've actually identified something with my partner that I think they may experience from time to time, which seems to subside with yoga breathing. So I think there would be a lot of people that all of a sudden, Steve, you know, like when it was spoken about a long time ago, that went, hang on a second, you're describing what I live with or what my parent lives with.
Steve, I wonder, is that 35%, is that maybe an underestimate as well?
Well, I reckon it is. And let me explain why, because we've talked about a few things here this morning. In fact, I think it was Debbie who talked about the bridges. Now, she was more talking about a phobia. So she can predict every time she goes over a bridge, she'll get anxiety. That's a phobia. There's nothing out of the blue. Yours, for example, Nate, yours is panic, because mostly you don't get it. It's a little bit out of the blue. It's random. That's panic more than a phobia. And also, it's important to know anxiety and panic's normal. You know, it's incredibly common. That 35%, nearly every person I ever ask, have you, and I describe panic very well, they say, oh, I've had that. I had that. I had to present in front of the board and I got very anxious and I couldn't breathe. Yeah, that's a panic attack. So I think they're virtually ubiquitous. Everyone has them. And the analogy is like depression. We all get sad, but we don't all get clinical depression.
Yeah.
We all get anxiety in the odd panic attack, but we haven't all got panic disorder. Panic disorder is when it's overwhelming you lots each week, can't leave the house, agoraphobia, and it's impacting your lifestyle. If it's not impacting your lifestyle, it's essentially what we would call normal anxiety and panic.
Hey, Steve, just on that, there's a lot of questions coming in on the text line saying, what's the difference between panic and anxiety? So going on from what you're saying, is there a difference that we should be alluding to? And is that what you were just speaking about there, the idea of clinical and experiencing it?
So anxiety is the psychological state where you feel I'm going to use the same words to describe where you feel nervous and worried and an impending sense of doom, and then you get all the physical sensations, sweating, trembling, shortness of breath, chills, hot flushes, nausea, whatever you like. And panic is when it gets out of control and you actually get to the point where you just think, oh my God, I'm dying, or you think you can't breathe. So panic's really describing just an incredibly heightened anxiety state. And the other feature of panic that distinguishes a little bit is it shoots off like a rocket. Like you feel a little bit anxious and then, the panic just starts to flood you. And you often don't even have time to warn people. You know, I had a panic attack once in a big meeting when I was doing a presentation, and I couldn't even, you know, if I had a second, I would have said, sorry, everyone, I'm just feeling a bit of anxiety. I'm going to step outside for a minute. I didn't even have a chance. I just had to walk out. And then afterwards, I came back 5-10 minutes later and said, sorry, everyone, that was a little panic attack. And I went back on with it.
There's a lot of text talking about having panic attacks occasionally at the worst times, in particular driving. There's been a really strong theme about driving. This text here saying, I do have panic attacks occasionally. The worst one was on my way to Phillip Island with my son in the car. I struggled to get going. I stopped to find myself before I could get going again. I mean, this is the thing, I guess, is learning how to deal with them, because you don't want to be behind the wheel of a car, Steve.
No, you've actually touched on a couple of these issues during it too. Travel is an incredibly common trigger, especially overseas travel, but any travel, because you're often stressed to get away, nervous, you've got deadlines to get to, you're out of your comfort zone, you're thinking of lots of different things. You've often had a week of stress getting organised to go away. So travel is incredibly common. I get lots of calls from people overseas saying, you know, basically describing a panic attack and saying, this has happened, what do I need to do? So any travel is common, and of course you pull over, you don't want to be driving. The other one you mentioned earlier was menopause. That's relatively common to get panic attacks for the first time in menopause to, wow, because it's a time of enormous
to
change.
Add to the joy of menopause.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. But, you know, and so it's more that you've got lots of physical symptoms and you're run down. And so it's a common time to start getting the odd panic attack. And so it's important to see someone and make sure everything's okay. But it's not like a huge issue, but lots of women going through menopause describe their first panic attack.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us today and taking us through some of this with a little bit of advice thrown in as well. Thanks for joining us on The Conversation Hour.
No worries. Thanks for having me on.
Professor at Melbourne University and a psychiatrist at the Peter MacCallum Cancer Centre, Steve Ellen, speaking to you there. Nate Byrne's been with you as well. Nate, that piece that you wrote, we've leaned on heavily to discuss today, and even hearing Steve and other people refer to it as well. We find so much in The Conversation Hour, sometimes just talking about something opens up a window to a different world. You wrote about this from your experience. What was the response like when you first published it?
It was pretty overwhelming, actually. I had just so many people reaching out to me, just every way imaginable. I practically had a pigeon come and drop off a note. It was really incredible. And I think because, like Steve was saying, it's such a common experience and so few people have had the ability or have even known to try and find a name for it. When you see something that can affect you so much spelled out, I think that's really connected with people, which is great. And I know from a lot of my friends that it's become a talking point in the office as well for their team meetings at the time. So they could say, hey, does this happen for anyone around here? And it's helped people to understand that, yes, it does. The thing is that I want everyone to take away is that it can literally happen to anyone. In their safest place, doing the thing they love the most, there's nothing wrong with me. It's absolutely treatable and manageable and something that you can live with. And it can take the shape of literally anyone around you.
Well, as that text said, Nate Byrne, you are a cool dude. Wow. And thank you so much for sharing this story again. You know, because as we said earlier, it may not always be comfortable to relive it. You know, we don't want people to go through it all again. But it's just so important, isn't it, to talk about it, to share it, to know that you're not alone, that it's really common. And I think you're right. I think that 35% is probably grossly, it's a higher figure than that. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Anytime. Both of you go well.